Okay, NLE Wars, Episode 2. It's Nick Gold here.
Merrill Davis.
We're from Chesapeake Systems, creative IT for the creative professional, because we're also creative. Yeah, and this is Episode 2 of the Workflow Show.
Every time you say Episode 2, though, I feel like...
some Star Wars reference or something.
I know, it makes me sad.
Yeah, there never was an Episode 2, Merrill.
That's right. This is actually Episode 13.
The Return of Darth. No,
Darth?
NLE Wars. Well, see, that kind of fits into it, too. Episode 2, the NLE Wars.
The NLE Wars.
Okay, today on the Workflow Show, we are talking about something that we never thought we'd actually have to think about again, which is our editors, our workstations, what sits in front of us that we actually do our work on all day long.
So I guess we should start. I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, you must know what NLE stands for. If you don't, it's Nonlinear Editor. That's important to know because this is the digital workflow for all modern film and broadcast editing.
The NLE Wars. Well, let's talk about what brought this about.
Sure. I think it'd be important to talk a little bit about the history first, which is pretty well known. Avid's always been a big name in the game. They were sort of the grandfathers of the NLE in many ways. There were other competitors.
There were others. Don't forget our Media 100s and
which still exists to this day.
What was it? Speed Racer was one of them. And
sounds like a Japanese movie to me.
Yeah, probably is. But, you know, there were some editors. Avid early on kind of ruled the roost. I remember in college we were kind of transitioning from Sony 3/4-inch U-matic linear editing over to Avid-based nonlinear. And, you know, they ruled things for a while, especially in cinema, also in broadcast for operations that went away from linear tape-to-tape editing, which for some organizations is like 2 years ago. So they might have actually skipped Avid altogether and gone to the next big kid on the block, which was Apple and Final Cut.
I remember when Final Cut first came out and, you know, the first slew of television shows that were using it. I mean, like, there was still a stigma associated with the product because, you know, what does Apple know about filmmaking?
Well, and you know, it's interesting. In Chesapeake, we always kind of were oriented around Final Cut from the, you know, we've been around for over 20 years, but this whole video group of ours here at Chesapeake has really been like, I don't know, the last 9 or 10. And we were really squarely oriented around Final Cut from the get-go. And it matured a lot over the years. It was something that really wasn't ready for prime time for the first few iterations. And then probably around, I don't know, Final Cut 4.5 or thereabouts, you know, it started to get to be quite a bit more credible.
I agree. I mean, the expansion of the tool set over time, it was great. And it's important to note that during this transition, you know, the ultimate decider was cost of entry.
Yeah. Yeah, Avid definitely was never really the value option, that's for sure. So, you know, a lot of folks, especially in broadcast, especially in reality television, a lot of folks moved to Final Cut. Dare I say, Final Cut has almost been an enabler in a lot of ways for an entire slew of what we now get in our, like, 300-channel television programming. I mean, there's a lot of shows that probably wouldn't have been able to afford post-production budgets if they had had to buy Avid systems and ISIS or at the time Unity storage. I mean, it was just priced out of the production and post-production budgets of a lot of organizations.
And you talk about, you know, quick turnaround here and mobilization. You know, there was something to be said about...
Well, and yeah, Apple had the laptop editing thing going on or field editing. I mean, you know, it was viable to probably edit on a laptop in Final Cut, you know, before Avid. And then Avid rolled out Avid Express, which no longer even really exists. But that was kind of their answer to the laptop editing thing. But Apple really forged ahead with that. And, you know, there was always Adobe Premiere Pro, obviously important to mention. I, in my own experience, I actually used it as my college gig of being an event videographer.
So, you know, and anecdotally, that's what everyone really thinks of. Up until now, I would say, about Adobe Premiere. Adobe Premiere was, for a very long time, the product that wedding videographers and, you know, like, weekenders who put their toe in the, you know, like, the videography market would use.
I would say it was pretty competent at that. And I remember, you know, using it. It was really the first NLE that I was comfortable using. In fact, it was, I had a much easier time editing in Premiere back in the day. Then I can't believe I just said back in the day.
You did say back in the day.
Talking about like 8 or 10 years ago.
Yeah. But the thing that's important to note really is I found, and I've worked with a whole slew of people who have come from every direction when it comes to editing. And the truth of the matter is you're likely most comfortable with the NLE you started with. So I, for example, I started on Avid. So I still feel at ease in that setting. And then I went to FCP. I didn't like FCP's way of handling certain things, but I moved with the sea change, and then I became proficient in FCP. But I can't, you know, not to talk bad about Premiere, because I feel like CS6 release, Premiere Pro 6, is very robust and you know, a great entry to the market. But truth be told, there was a time that if I had walked in to interview for an editing job and I said, well, I'm a Premiere editor, they would have laughed
me out
of their offices.
Yeah, that wouldn't get you very far.
They would laugh me.
You know, I think a lot of, especially younger editors, you know, came up with Final Cut and maybe don't have Avid Media Composer experience, but being able to be a Final Cut editor, especially here in our home base territory of the Mid-Atlantic, where you've got, you know, a lot of smaller and mid-sized production and post-production companies that were really very Final Cut oriented from the beginning, that could get you a job.
Sure.
Being a Premiere editor, really, you just didn't run into Premiere as often in that kind of a space. And you know, it's also
certainly
important.
Not in New York, certainly not in Los Angeles. I mean, like, it wasn't really considered a big player. And I think it's important to note that at the end of the day, all these NLEs give you the same end result. There are 6 or 8 different ways to skin a cat. The perspective that I've always had is that Avid sort of comes from this this place where it keeps the idea of analog editing in mind. There's, you know, the bin is the bin because there was a bin for your
little
analog
scrap of filmies.
Yeah, you know, that actually you swept off the table into a bin. Whereas Final Cut has always been more computery, or Nick would put it, Apple-y, which relies more on a knowledge of an operating system and how to use a computer program as much as it does to think in an analog sort of way about editing. Yeah. And then Premiere's really taking most of its cues these days from Final Cut 7.
Now, there was also something else interesting that happened that some people kind of forget about, which is that both Avid and Adobe with Premiere stepped away from the Mac platform for a number of years. You had a time period where, you know, they basically both pulled their support of the Mac platform and went heavily PC.
And we were all like, what's up with that?
Well, and you know, it was interesting because so many editors were Mac-based, and you always had been using, say, Media Composer on a Mac back in those beige G3 days of yore. And and even before that, and with the, like all of those old
systems. When I got my Express Pro install, though, that was the last time I was really heavily working on Avid. Was around they hadn't really consolidated their lines yet, and I was using Express Pro because at the time that was the cheapest cost of entry to get to the Avid platform, and I had a lot of existing Avid projects and things like that. But what happened when I got Express Pro was I was delighted that I could install it on both a PC and on a Mac, but the stability was tenfold better on the PC.
Took them a while to kind of fully get back to the Mac, so to speak, and be kind of a full-fledged member in that space. And I think these days, probably the majority, I would say, of new Avid installs are probably Mac-based. You know, I see a lot of Mac-based Avid systems out there, and obviously Mac-based Final Cut systems, because that was the only option. And more and more of these Premiere systems. So let's talk about kind of why we're even thinking about this now, when everything was so solid. I mean, the trigger, obviously, was
Final Cut X.
Well, yes, and Apple's kind of, you know, forced re-envisioning, if you will, of NLEs. And here they had a product that had finally kind of fought its way through the gauntlet to, you know, gain mainstream acceptance in the post and broadcast world. And then, like, just as we were getting comfortable with it was torn from our hands.
Yes, it was torn from our hands. And I would say this about FCP 7. It did more than sort of force its way to acceptance. To give you a sense of its stranglehold on the marketplace, 8 of the last 8 jobs I did all were on Final Cut Pro 7.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, not only was it pretty good, although it was showing its age, and certainly the software code base that it was written on was old and needed to be revamped. It needed to be. Everyone, you know, everyone was very used to how Final Cut worked, but they wanted it to be faster, basically. A little more elegant, a little bit faster. And because of that old code, lots of render. So, you know, the thing that Apple really needed to do was rewrite some of the oldest portions of the code because it, number one, was not 64-bit, you know, capable. It could not deal with more than a couple of gigs of RAM that you had installed in your system. So they needed to kind of redo a lot of the old code for that. They needed to redo a lot of the code to be able to make Final Cut able to deal with these multi-core processors that we have. It really was barely capable of dealing with more than a single processor. Maybe for transcoding using compressor, you might get a little more than one processor. Maybe that could actually speed things up. But Final Cut itself could never take advantage of like a 12-core Mac Pro that was behaving like a 24 Mac Pro.
This is true.
And then the video cards, of course. As we all know, video cards have almost in some ways outpaced the performance of CPUs. And, you know, again, color and motion took advantage of your GPU, your graphics card, your 3D card to do 2D video processing. But Final Cut itself never was revitalized. And so Apple knew they had to redo it. But what did they do?
They redid it.
Oh, they redid it, all right. I mean, you know, I hate to say it, but it's true. They kind of threw the baby out with the bathwater, and they came out with something very new. And it was shocking.
And different. You know, I think it's important to note that they've sort of refocused the market here as far as FCPX is concerned. Anecdotally, I don't know a single individual filmmaker, editor, or production company that has done a full transition to Final Cut 10. I just don't know of any of them.
Well, and I think a lot of people are like, well, I kind of want it in my toolbox, especially maybe for some short form stuff. It's actually grown into a much more mature product over the last year and a half that it's been out. And finally is appropriate for certain types of projects, but, you know, isn't really in some ways, I think, aimed at the same sector of the market, at least as of today, that Final Cut 7 and its predecessors were.
Sure. And I think the most common criticism, which is almost rote at this point, would be that it looks like they just took a bit of iMovie and they FCPized it a little bit.
Well, and I think there's some truth to that. Our technician, Brian Suma, who a lot of our listeners probably know and love, you know, had an interesting observation when Final Cut 10 was finally unveiled at NAB a few years ago, which was, well, we were actually kind of seeing it come together all along in that newer version of iMovie that Apple launched in whenever it was. I think it was iMovie 2008 that was like kind of the whole new rewrite of iMovie. And in some ways, we were seeing the structure of Final Cut 10 come together before our eyes without really noticing that that's what we were seeing in iMovie.
And the other thing really about Final Cut 10 is, you know, it seems to be difficult to really bring it into an enterprise, environment. It seems much more geared towards an individual editor than it does for, you know, an enterprise level kind of thing.
Well, you know, there's a lot of specific reasons for that. And like, for instance, if you have a SAN system, especially an XSAN, Apple's own SAN, so to speak, they licensed it. You know, it's actually StoreNext, the SAN system. But if you have an XSAN or a similar SAN, you know, Final Cut 10 does not work as elegantly in that kind of shared storage environment.
And I think it's important to note that
as Final Cut 7,
they have released some white papers to make it work, but it's not intuitive.
It's not as intuitive. It kind of still forces every user to be on their own page versus really seamlessly collaborating. And then, you know, you looked at Final Cut Server yanked from us. You know, a lot of people were convinced, and we helped convince some of them, let's make Final Cut Server the heart of your environment. It's a media asset manager. It integrates very nicely with Final Cut. And yet it kind of died on the vine and now is not a living product any longer. And it was at the heart of a lot of people's workflow.
If you're at a place where, and this is what still I'd say 80% of our customer base and the industry at large is at, where they're still on FCP 7. They, you know, I got a call this morning from a customer that they say, well, I've got 4-year-old Mac Pros and just, you know, updated the RAM and the video card, but nothing's working right. I'm like, well, what's your edit platform? Well, Final Cut 7. At some point, your hand's going to be forced, but I think most people have not made the ultimate decision yet.
Well, and, you know, remember too, and I think this is important to note, how Apple handled the transition from 7 to 10, right?
I thought they grabbed the rug and they pulled it.
Well, yeah, and then they very suddenly basically pulled Final Cut 7 from the market. When they began selling Final Cut 10 through the Mac App Store exclusively, you know, you had to buy it online through the new online sales mechanism, they at the same moment yanked Final Cut 7 from the market, even though this Final Cut 10 thing was a completely new beast. And let's be honest, it alienated a lot of folks. If you were a broadcaster or a production or post environment that had a number of workstations and one day you need to ramp up production to do just, you know, a new show that's come in and you just need a few more workstations that behave just like the others, you're not going to make that shift on that point in time to just say, okay, we're going to use this brand new thing, Final Cut 10. You want just another Final Cut 7 machine. And it was like Apple went out of their way to say, no, you can't have your toys, Jimmy. You've been bad. And it's like, what gives, Apple? We've supported you for so many years. We supported Final Cut. It's become essential to our post-production environment. And now you're going to literally cut it off and say you can't buy just another one that works how all of your other ones did. That really alienated a lot of folks.
And this was the beginning shots of the NLE war.
Yeah. Sure. So let's talk about option number one that is on everyone's mind. Let's talk about Avid and Avid Media Composer. It's 64-bit.
It
can use gobs of RAM. If you have 16 gigs of RAM or 24 gigs of RAM or 48 gigs of RAM in a Mac Pro, you know, Avid Media Composer 6 will actually use it.
And, you know, I would say also the elephant in the room here really is, as we talked about a little bit earlier, the cost of entry for Avid has never historically been cheap. But within the last, I guess I would say cycle, we hate that word, don't we? Cycle.
I like the word cycle. I get yelled at for using
it. Well, you know,
but I use it in like a salesy term.
I see.
I've only got so many cycles to think about this stuff, man.
So there was a time when the only I/O hardware that you could use with Avid was their proprietary hardware. So if you needed to ingest,
not cheap.
It was Avid's way, or
you could put together 4 Final Cut systems for the price of an Avid, and this is why for years we were replacing Avids with Final Cut, but it's gotten way cheaper, way cheaper. I mean, like, this offer just ended last week, I think, but they were giving you Symphony, the high-end Avid kind of editing and finishing product that if you were a Final Cut user, you didn't even have to give them your old discs. You just had to say, I'm a Final Cut user. Here's my Final Cut license, which you're still going to let me use. I'm just, you know, proving to you I'm an actual customer of Final Cut. We're going to give you Symphony for $1,000, and you can use it with a Blackmagic or an AJA card.
That's right. Blackmagic, AJA, which historically, I mean, I think that was probably one of the most long-term requests from Avid users.
Well, that was it exactly. Don't force us to use, you know, a while ago it was the Adrenaline, now it's been the Nitrous and Nitrous DX. Don't force us to use your hardware. It's too expensive. Let me use my kind of quote-unquote off-the-shelf AJA, Blackmagic, what have you card, Matrox maybe. You know, there's a few out there, off-the-shelf kind of I.O. cards. Or these days, maybe a Thunderbolt device or something like that. Let me use it. It works with all my other apps. Please let me use it. And they finally basically said, okay.
I would say that the landscape has changed in such a manner that there's an expectation from the consumer in this market space.
Openness.
Yeah, they want to be able to get a piece of hardware and use it in Avid, but also if they got to jump into it from Premiere for anything, or if they got to jump into After Effects, they want to be able to do the same I/O ingest that they were able to do on the other thing.
Or just monitor out to an HD monitor.
I mean,
or lay back to tape if you're still having to do that.
Yeah, if you're laying back to tape, call us. We can help you.
Well, some people have to.
Yeah.
I mean, tape isn't the worst thing in the world.
Isn't the worst thing in the world. The worst thing in the world is tape.
Wax cylinders.
Wax cylinders with tape.
So Avid is now an option. Media Composer 6 is out, 6 dot whatever. It does require you to be on a Mac on 10.7.3, I believe, but it can eat your gobs of RAM. It's cheaper than it's ever been. It may work with an AJA or Blackmagic card you already own, or maybe you can buy one for it if you don't have a card that's supported, or maybe you don't even really need an I/O card. You just run it on your Mac hardware or your PC. And, of course, PC is an option for that. And it works great, and it's as cheap as it's ever been, really. And if it's a little too expensive for you, yeah, wait a few months, and Avid will probably run another special offer, and it'll super cheap again.
They do. They do. And there's something to be said.
They're fighting, man. They're fighting hard.
They are.
And we should say, we made a big shift at Chesapeake by becoming an Avid Elite reseller. We were always like, I don't want to say the anti-Avid guys, but frankly, Avid was not knocking on our door saying, we want you guys to be a reseller, up until Apple kind of opened the door for them into a space. And I think Avid saw that it was an advantage to work with a lot of these outfits like ourselves, who really did kind of push Final Cut into a lot of the environments it was in. And, you know, we welcomed them, and we said, you know, we want to be a multi-platform solutions vendor for our clients. And we went through the rigmarole of getting signed up as an Avid Elite reseller. And we're actually making some very interesting headway there. We're opening up a new facility for one of our clients in New York in probably the next month, month and a half, which is going to be a heavy-duty Avid environment with Avid storage, the ISIS 5000 system. And for them, that was not only a viable choice, but it was a very good choice.
And a long-term one. I think it's important to talk about longevity here. Avid's not going away.
Avid editors genuinely really like Avid. And it's important to kind of mention one of the key differences between Avid and Final Cut. So, you know, Avid is a really interesting app. It's a lot like a lot of other high-end creative professional software in that if you're an Avid editor, it's like you basically need to know how to turn on your computer, how to launch Media Composer, and then you can edit.
It's very self-contained.
You don't really need to think about all the dirty, nitty-gritty stuff of the computer, the operating system, all of the little nooks and crannies of mastering that system as a whole in order...
The English muffin of post-production.
Nooks and crannies.
Yeah, that's where I went with that.
You know, I haven't had an English muffin in a long time.
I had one the other day. They're great.
They are.
They are. I mean, like, they evoke, like, a nostalgia. Not that I ever grew up in the, the English countryside or anything, but...
I don't think they actually have the style of English muffins that we know of as English muffins in England.
Is it like Chinese food? Like,
maybe.
I mean, not in England, but I mean, like, in China.
Yeah, like American Chinese is not a Chinese kind of thing.
Totally.
Okay, let's go back to the point. That I don't even remember what the point was.
The point was that Avid editors turn on their machines. It's a self-sufficient environment.
And I think that was a lot of the pain in us over the years, bringing a lot of people from Avid to Final Cut.
I agree.
It forced the editors to kind of know more about how their computer as a whole operated than they probably wanted to know. And you know, even today, when you're working in Avid Media Composer, it's very self-contained, as you said. And the way it handles its bin management, for instance, you don't really have to think very much about your file system. Avid is kind of handling a lot of that for you. All you have to really be thinking about are your bins. And the reality is, well, that's a little bit more of an old-school paradigm in some ways. It's one that, interestingly, Apple is kind of themselves latching onto with Final Cut X, because the event in Final Cut X is basically akin in some ways to the bin in Avid Media Composer. So,
okay.
Media Composer, as viable an option as it's ever been, and a worthy contender in the NLE Awards.
Indeed, and it has a wonderful place in my heart as the first NLE I ever learned on.
So, let's talk about another contender. Why is it that all these companies' names begin with the letter A? Is that so they like show up in the yellow pages at the beginning?
Yeah.
No, I don't think an IT company would actually like think of that.
Well, no, we decided that Chesapeake, the letter C, was good enough for us.
Yeah, we don't want to be like the first thing, because whoever goes with like the first thing that you stumble across,
people.
My last girlfriend certainly didn't think that.
Hi-oh!
So, let's talk about Adobe, the next kid on the block.
Let's talk about Adobe.
So we've been working with Adobe for literally like all of our company's existence over 20 years. I mean, Adobe and Apple are like, I don't know what they're like. They're kind of like
those...
it's a love-hate relationship.
Well, here's the deal. It's like your second cousin. You're always really happy to see them. But then you spend a little bit of extra time with them, and then you realize why you like them, but then you're ready for them to leave.
I only have a handful of second cousins, and
I'm sorry to any of my second cousins and who are listening to this.
Especially for kissing cousins, but that's a whole...
I don't have any. Do you have kissing cousins? I don't.
No.
Is that a Baltimore
thing?
I don't know.
Probably. So, no offense to all of our Baltimore-based listeners. So, no.
We're
Baltimore-based.
Yeah, we're Baltimore Rons. Baltimoreans.
So, Adobe. Speaking of kissing cousins, Adobe and Apple. So, Adobe. We talked about Premiere Pro. We talked about how it was kind of away from the Apple platform a while. It's come back, but it has a little bit of this stigma. That's the thing that kind of like wedding videographers use.
So what's the very first thing that we can do to sort of allay that stigma? I would say, and for the record, I'm editing two projects right now in Premiere 6. One of them, I'm using the keyboard preset for Final Cut 7. So it's literally exactly like...
So they've gone out of their way to make it as easy as possible for Avid users and Final Cut users to feel really comfy using
Premiere
Pro 6.
There's an Avid setting too.
Yeah. You can do the Avid key commands, you can do the Final Cut key commands, and it's also much more elegantly presented. It's much cleaner. It's not busy. Dare I say, as I was saying, it looks almost like what we would have thought Final Cut 7 would have evolved into.
It does kind of feel like the spiritual successor to Final Cut 7.
But they also have a way where you can lay out the windows where it looks a heck of a lot like Media Composer.
If you take the time to map and devise a workflow that works for you as an individual editor, you know, whether it's I and O to mark in and out, and, you know, it's a, you know... If it's V to bring it down to the timeline, if you're used to Avid's scenario, you can make it that. Or if you're confused along the way, and this is what I think most of the editors are dealing with now because they've dealt with more than one platform, is, oh, well, I really like this functionality from FCP7, but I really want to be able to mark in and mark out and lay down to the track in a way that is similar to Avid. So you really have total flexibility.
You can, and it bears saying that Adobe also is fighting really hard to gain some prominence here. Now, the funny thing about Premiere Pro is, as Adobe likes to say, most people already have it, or a lot of users already have it.
The call came from inside the house.
It's been lurking. It's been watching
it. It has. I mean, like, if you have
Production Premium or Master Collection, mm-hmm. but if you even have Production Premium, because let's say I wanted After Effects and Photoshop and having, like, you know, Encore for disc authoring and Audition for audio, you know, so some combination of factors led to you buying Production Premium. Well, guess what, guys? You already own Premiere Pro.
And most people bought it for Photoshop and After Effects.
Yes. And... yet, you may have a relatively or very powerful tool, especially if you do the upgrade to CS6, right there, ready for you to begin using, so long as you want to learn how to use it, which, of course, Chesapeake Systems can help with.
No, you know, the thing about Premiere, and I think this is worth noting, is that this is still new territory for Adobe.
To be aimed squarely at broadcast and cinema and all of that.
No, I know, and there have been very large outfits that have gone Premiere. CNN comes to mind.
Yeah, lots of folks are, and the reality is it's viable, and you know, launching Premiere Pro 6 does not remove Final Cut 7 from your system, so a lot of folks can kind of wade into the territory comfortably.
You made a very good point about still keeping Final Cut 7. I feel like we're still a year or two away from not
making
having
a clean break
on that on a machine. So there's, you know, all the legacy projects, but you know, in talking about legacy projects, I think it's important to note that it's actually a little bit easier to export a project from FCP 7 and bring it in
to Premiere
than it is to have to use a third-party tool.
To go into Final Cut 10.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, that's something to be said.
So, yes, because of XML, the wonderful thing we know is XML. In Final Cut, you can export your sequence or clips or whatnot as XML. It maintains a lot of the characteristics of your project file, but in this kind of open form. That Adobe, again, knowing that they have to fight hard to kind of earn Final Cut editors' business, they've been very good at adopting XML as a format of Final Cut XML specifically that Premiere Pro knows how to work with. And so you can bring that XML dump of your Final Cut project into Premiere Pro and largely be up and running with it. You'll have to do some tweaks.
But that's expected. But certainly, it's not as big as a problem as bringing it into FCPX, which...
And we'll talk more about FCPX in a moment. But, you know, the other thing I want to say about Premiere Pro, you know, we talked about how Media Composer is 64-bit. Well, Premiere Pro is 64-bit. It also is very good at leveraging multiple CPU cores.
It is GPU accelerated
as
well.
And that's the kicker. That's the kicker, buddy. It's what they call the Mercury Playback Engine. So this is like kind of the architecture in Premiere... And it's also kind of in some of their other applications like After Effects and now even Photoshop, where they can dramatically accelerate a lot of tasks that you would do moment to moment in your editing platform by utilizing your 3D graphics card, even if you're not doing anything that involves 3D at all. And the way that they do this, or the way that it's done most optimally in Premiere Pro, is using the instruction set that NVIDIA has developed for the NVIDIA cards, or especially the higher-end or more modern NVIDIA cards, called CUDA, C-U-D-A. And these are like special programmable shader cores and such on your graphics card that actually video applications can be written to take advantage to accelerate things beyond what your CPUs are capable of doing in and of themselves.
Just for a little bit of perspective, there used to be a time when if you needed to really bite deep into some like HD video, it was let's get the RAM up, let's
get a faster machine,
let's make sure these procs are high enough that it can do the processing. But you know, now we're in a place where those are all things that we always want to do, and I'm by no means am I saying don't upgrade your RAM,
but you might be able to throw in a 3D graphics card and dramatically have a better working environment just by kind of throwing in a new card upgrade.
So, but here's an important distinction, and that is which card vendors support this GPU acceleration and which do not.
So Premiere Pro CS6 can get a little bit of oomph off of an ATI card. You know, I keep calling them ATI. AMD bought ATI. They're not called ATI anymore, Nick. I have to kind of get used to calling them AMD.
The Berlin Wall has fallen.
ATI was bought by them, the graphics manufacturer, so now it's the AMD Radeons.
What did ATI stand for?
I have no idea.
I see.
But I don't even know what, like...
AMD stands for?
Mac stands for.
Isn't
Mac all capitalized?
I don't even know.
No, it's not. That's
no,
a lie.
I know. That's...
So anyway, but going back to the point, was that Premiere Pro 6 can get a little bit of oomph off of a modern ATI card, but the crux of it is the NVIDIA cards, because they have this CUDA instruction set that Premiere Pro and the other Adobe apps have been specifically written to leverage to really accelerate on-screen playback. You know, you could have many channels of video in their native flavor without having had to transcode to an iframe codec like ProRes. You know, lots of graphics and effects going on, HD, up the wazoo, you know, again, multiple layers, you know, graphics, text, you name it. And if you have a suitable NVIDIA card, which is one of the Quadros, like the 4800 or the Quadro 4000, or the NVIDIA card in the brand new MacBook Pro with Retina display, or the other very new MacBook Pros that just came out that have NVIDIA cards, you will be able to take advantage of this GPU-accelerated Mercury engine in Premiere Pro. And boom, baby, that's like a whole other level.
Typically, the way that somebody's going to be purchasing this is in the production premium tool set, in the suite.
Well, that's the thing. You're getting it anyway, right?
You're getting it anyway. So if you are like, well, we got to get After Effects, this is the excellent opportunity to at least give it a dry run. And of course, both Avid and Premiere have 30-day full free trials.
Yeah, go to their websites, try it out, and then buy all of it from us, please.
Yes, by all means, buy it from us. But, you know, the other thing that's I would note before we move on to the next NLE would be that, look, you're getting a value add by getting a suite. We're looking at, like, you know, Adobe bought Iridos.
Yeah, speed grade. Speed grade color, color grading.
It's
neat.
Phenomenally robust program.
I wouldn't call it as robust as, like, Resolve.
It's not.
But it's getting there.
It's not. But for something that is sort of an added component.
For something that a year ago was like $25,000, $50,000, and now it's just thrown into the mix. It's reminiscent of when Apple bought Color. We've got SpeedGrade. It's a value add.
Sure, sure.
And you're going to get Premiere Pro. You're going to get your Photoshop. You're going to get your After Effects. You're going to get your Audition. You're going to get your Encore. You're going to get like the other apps.
And your encoder.
Into there.
You know, the other thing is...
Oh, yeah. Adobe's media transcoding app is pretty hot stuff, and it churns out Flash.
It
which
does.
Compressor never did without a third-party plugin.
Well, you know, thank God Adobe's keeping it in the family. The other thing about it is great is that they have these wonderful presets for existing platforms. So if your content delivery is ultimately to something like Vimeo, you know that you might have to go and find just exactly what the settings are and then manually set them and then export, then upload, then test. Or, you know, they have some pre-existing settings here.
Yeah, Adobe wants to make things stupid easy for
YouTube,
us
Vimeo,
editors.
You know, that kind of stuff at that level of content delivery. You know,
select your preset and go.
Yes. Thank you for selecting Johnny Cab. I don't know.
So, random Total Recall reference of the hour. It's just, yeah. You know, they're remaking that.
It makes me so sad.
It looks good from a special effects perspective, but
it's a fairly recent movie. Well, not that recent, but
it had really good special effects for the time.
It did. There was a Philip K. Dick story too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think like 90% of all science fiction movies actually were Philip K. Dick stories.
Yeah, it's a shame that poor guy didn't make any money.
And was crazy.
I think he was a drunk, too.
We all have our issues.
We do. None of them are being Philip K. Dick, though.
That's true. Talking to, like, alien space satellites that are beaming transmissions into your brain.
He's the real...
Although I actually have had that.
Yeah. He's the real Ron L. Hubbard.
L. Ron.
That's what I said.
Okay. Anyway, let's go back to the subject, which is... Well, I think we've kind of talked a lot about Premiere Pro. It's worthy. It's great. It's modern software. Adobe's fighting really hard for the users. They're making it as easy as possible for Final Cut people to transition to it. Give it a look-see. So we haven't talked about Final Cut 10, and it bears talking about because it's actually gotten kind of good.
Yeah, so the first thing, you know, that one of the very first gripes about the initial release of FCPX is, where the hell is my multicam editing?
Yeah, multicam just like... walked out on us.
I mean, I've got multicam edits from FCP6, and you're telling me now I can't have
you
that?
Don't even get multicam anymore, buddy.
Yeah, so that's upsetting.
So that but shocked people. You know, the magnetic timeline, for all of its attractiveness, was a very new way of working that kind of, you know, it's kind of the Apple way of you know, we're going to kind of take a little bit of control away from you, but we're going to make your life easier because of it. So it's a trade you're probably willing to make. But, you know, there were a number of aspects of Final Cut 10 that, as it's been iterated with these what look like minor updates on the store, you know, it's like 10.01 and 10.02 and 10.03. I think they're up to like 10.04 now. Those have actually been very significant upgrades. I mean, like multicam got folded back in, and this was a free update for people who bought Final Cut 10 at any point since it was released. It's also $299 now. If you want to get compressor, it's another $49 or whatever, and if you want to get motion, it's another $49. Every other app that was part of Final Cut Studio either got killed or kind of had some of its features taken out and rolled into Final Cut 10, and I'm thinking of color here. There are some color grading abilities, you know, in Final Cut 10 that clearly are kind of taken from color. But Final Cut 10 is interesting in that it's inexpensive. It's very modern software. The performance of it, you know, is very high performance. Again, multi-CPU, GPU, 64-bit.
And I would imagine that as they move forward, you'll see further enhancements as it relates to the Retina display.
Well, and they've already, you know, it's interesting with that new extraordinarily high resolution in the MacBook Pro Retina display. Final Cut 10 is one of the very first apps that Apple adapted to use that ludicrous amount of screen real estate. And so you can kind of monitor a 1080p video in the preview window at full resolution, and it's still eating up only like a corner of your screen, and you still have kind of, I won't call them bins, I'll call them events, and your clips and subclips, your timeline down below.
And this is where Apple shines, really, is they're kind of bleeding edge with this right now.
But
I would expect probably in a year and a half or so, that this would be standard affair
I don't think it'll take that long for Media Composer and Adobe to adapt their apps for the Retina display.
And in fact, during their announcement, they said that Adobe was already well in partnership.
They're on board, so to speak. Yeah. You know, it's anyone's guess as to when we'll see like all the Adobe apps. And
it'll probably be a bit as CS6 just came out. You know.
Yeah. We shall see, right?
Right. But all conjecture.
It'll happen. But Apple has been very quick to adapt Final Cut 10 for this new technology and to leverage all the other very interesting hardware that's under the hood on a modern computer these days.
And I think it's great because one of the biggest problems that I have as an editor is managing my workspace. Literally not having enough space to put everything. And
yeah,
you know,
so having like that 2880 by 1800 display makes that kind of easy.
Plus, you know, you do an output to a second screen with a MacBook Pro with a Retina.
It's got HDMI built in right
Yeah,
now.
You know, just...
How long
just,
have we been waiting for that on a Mac laptop?
That's great. But that's another podcast.
So, but Final Cut 10, $299... Very much worth looking at. The problem is, let's say you're in a SAN environment. If you're in a SAN environment, you know, all of your media either needs to be inside of one of these so-called event folders, or an event folder needs to be kind of pointing at media file that's outside of the event folder. Only one editor can be really connected to and using an event at once. And so this is like kind of like, well, why did I buy a SAN if I really can't have multiple people utilizing the same media at once? And so Apple comes out with this white paper, right? Turns out, well, you can have a common set of media files, say, on a SAN system that everyone is using and editing on at the same time. The problem is everybody needs to create their own event folder, and those events then have little pointers that are pointing to the media files that are outside of them. And even though you might not actually have to duplicate those media files, all of your subclipping, all the little metadata keywords that Final Cut 10 so gloriously allows you to associate with clips and subclips in your events, well, no one is sharing that information. So it's like you have like half of this little mini asset management system built into your editor, but only one user at a time can use it, even if you're on a SAN. So it's like, guys, what's the point? And some people I know have told me that if you kind of like look at some of the interesting little assets that are buried inside of the Final Cut 10 application, you can actually find some little parts of the program that aren't really maybe even used today that are kind of maybe hinting at some things to come, maybe a more multi-user friendly kind of world for Final Cut 10.
And I think that's really, when it comes down to a decision associated with FCPX, we're talking, if you're a college student and you're working on your very first short film, by all means, plunk down the $299 and, like, you know, give it a whirl.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, I bought this nice DSLR recently, and I was like, well, what editing program do I want to buy and really learn the heck out of to use for my own just kind of messing around as a hobbyist, so to speak? And it was like, yeah, I'm going to spend $299 and get Final Cut 10 because it's going to be great for me. Would I necessarily switch a department of, you know, 6 or 8 or 10 or 12 users in a broadcast or post-production environment over to Final Cut 10? No, I wouldn't.
There needs to be a compelling reason for that. And, I haven't seen it yet. So I think the difference is, you know, and I think this is the thing that's been lost in the conversation about NLE in the last, 6 or 8 months. And that is that it has nothing to do with whether or not the product is better, and it has nothing to do with whether or not you can complete work with a product. I think a lot of people have taken up stance that says, like, look, what's wrong with FCPX? I can edit my videos and it's just fine. Look at the production quality. Everything's okay. And that's true. That's true. But that's also true for Avid. That's also true for Premiere. This largely has to do with how can you implement this. You're not making a TV show by yourself. If you're at a production company that has three, shows, run-and-gun ENG-style reality shows going on in the United States at any given moment, and then everything's coming back to be ingested, cataloged, and then thrown into an editor, FCPX just isn't there.
Well, and let's be honest. And what vendor do we feel comfortable throwing our resources and our money at and orienting our environment around? We've been so recently kind of scorned by our previous lover, Apple, who yanked Final Cut 7 from our hands.
She sent her friends over to get our records, and now they're just somebody we used to know.
Yeah. It is that kind of situation. Yeah, that I've been very familiar with that situation.
No. But,
But you're right. It's like, do we want to align with that? Am I going to stay warm to Apple? In fact, Apple's way of handling the Final Cut 7 transition and also their lack of substantial Mac Pro updates, which we're going to talk more about, I think, next week. I think it's forced a lot of users to even wonder, like, should I even be using a Mac anymore for video? And
hark! I mean, let's be clear. I love my Mac. We love our Macs. I've worked exclusively on Macs.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine switching.
But there are instances where pure processing power and availability are outweighing the love of Apple.
And I think people are like, I was very glad to see that the Mac Pro actually didn't get yanked. I think it's an important message from Apple that they actually don't want to discontinue it. And I do think it's also an important message that they said they have something very interesting coming for pros, which again, we'll talk more about next week in the Mac Pro episode. Coming in 2013. I don't think they're turning their back on this market at all. I don't.
I think they're trying to reframe it, and in typical Apple fashion, there is no news until there is such substantial news.
And let's be honest, right? I mean, with many different things that we now take for granted in the computing landscape, whether that's kind of on the consumer end of things or the pro end of things, Apple's been a huge mover in the last 25 years, and I think they just have this culture.
I feel
of,
old now.
I know, right? But we're really not.
No. It's a who
David Ryan, on the other hand.
Yeah.
Oh, just kidding.
Old Ironsides.
So Apple has a culture of keeping things close to their chest because they often do things that are a big shakeup, and so I don't think it's a good idea to count them out of the pro space just yet, but I think people also, validly are saying, well, here's Avid, here's Adobe. Their entire corporate models at this point are based on catering specifically to the creative professional user. Maybe I want to get more friendly with those guys because they need me as
they're
a creative user.
They're targeting their markets in such a manner that that is a little more laser-focused than Apple,
well,
publicly.
I mean, the reality is I think Apple really likes their pro users. I think the fact that pros use Macs kind of has this halo effect, to use an Apple term, to get people very interested in the platform. But let's face it.
They're not the core user group anymore.
If Apple stopped selling stuff that was specifically catering to pros, you wouldn't even notice it
in a quarterly report
because it would be akin to like one crate of iPads accidentally fell off of a ship.
So at the end of the day, we're talking three NLEs. One, Avid has been around for over 20 years, is time-tested, has a track record to go with it, has
cheap as it's ever been.
The cheapest it's ever been. Has built-in knowledge of an industry and professionals that have used it for 20 plus years.
Can't go wrong with
you. You really can't.
And then Adobe.
And then you have Adobe, who has been in your backyard the entire time anyway.
Clearly oriented around the creative professional user. You probably, half of you already own Premiere Pro. Just upgrade to CS6, which you should anyway. Throw an NVIDIA card in there and boom, good to go.
You have an opportunity to even move to Premiere with a FCP mindset. You can do that.
Yeah.
So again,
boom, shoot your XML out. Pull it into Premiere, good to go. So, and then Final Cut 10, $299.
The cheapest
download
of the bunch.
It in
cheapest
like half
of the bunch.
An hour.
We can't even sell it to you. You got to get it yourself. You got to go to the App Store. You got to download it. You got to pay $2.99.
And they also have, I think, a 30-day trial, so you can play with it.
You can, and that's the thing. All these have 30-day trials, but you're looking at a state institution, the newcomer, and then the cost-effective one.
Well,
I really think is the way you look at it.
Here's the thing, right? Like, and this debate of the NLE wars, and we should probably wrap up, so maybe this is the note we want to leave it on. You know, the NLE wars itself, you know, is obviously kind of giving the perspective that you have to choose sides, right? Let's be honest, folks. All three of these pieces of software can use, quote-unquote, off-the-shelf video cards, right?
That's right.
You can use an AJ Blackmagic card. Just make sure it's one of the more current ones.
And it's platform agnostic.
So
I think it's
important
to know, too.
A super cheap yet highly powerful IO card. You could, you know, probably buy all three of these major pieces of software
for still cheaper than it would be to get Avid 10 years ago.
Way cheaper. Cheaper than even I think Final Cut Studio was in the early days. You could own all of these pieces of software. Why not have a system that's loaded up with everything? You know, we have a client of ours that we've worked with for many years, and he had an interesting anecdote for me as we were chatting recently. He says, I've got everything on my system. I got After Effects, where I spend a lot of my time now. He says, I've got Premiere Pro. I got Final Cut 7. I've got Media Composer. And I'm finding that for certain types of projects, I actually like gravitating to one platform or the other, because I find that it's most efficient for that specific type of project. If it's a quick little couple-minute piece, just basically some
hack and slash.
Hack and slash stuff. Yeah, Final Cut 10 might actually be great, especially if it's just something you yourself need to churn out without much, you know, interaction with other users. If you're trying to do something super well-produced, especially kind of narrative feature-length stuff, Media Composer is great. If you want to do kind of a lot of the stuff that was your staples in Final Cut 7, Premiere Pro is a great option. Why not get an AJA or a Blackmagic card, throw all of the software on your system, you know, get a functional knowledge of each. These are not really that difficult pieces of software to use. Try learning some 3D rendering, 3D software sometime. This editing software looks like a breeze compared to that. Get all of them. Load up a system. Build it to be agnostic. Be able to say to any potential client, yeah, I can edit in that. And just be ready to go. And you'll probably find that certain projects you're working on kind of make sense to handle with one tool or the other. And just load up your computer to be kind of, as we like to say, the digital creative Swiss Army knife, where you have like a little tool for every little thing that might come at you. And you are highly marketable. You've got the best tool for the job. It's all really inexpensive. And
ta-da!
You basically can handle any eventuality that comes your way.
So the answer to the NLE wars really is,
be Switzerland.
You don't have to choose sides. You can choose to do all of them.
Yeah, absolutely. You can have every tool loaded on your machine for cheap, cheap, cheap. You know, we would encourage you to, if you choose to purchase any of these pieces of software, think of us, your buddies at Chesapeake Systems. We are reseller and partners for all of these folks. You know, and like, let's maybe just throw out, you know, there are some other platforms out there that are competing for the space. You've got Autodesk kind of taking Smoke in a more NLE
Smoke
direction.
Smoke is trying that. Of course, there's still Media 100. It still exists.
Sony Vegas is possibly available for sale. I mean,
Vegas does exist. Vegas is you know, not surprisingly, really, really popular in the education space.
So, you know, there's a lot of choices. You don't necessarily have to throw yourself purely into one camp. And I guess that means, despite this being kind of a period of flux for our editors, it's actually probably the best time to be an editor, because there's so many options that are at a price point that they've never been at before in terms of how low they are.
And there's so much reality television that's being shot right now.
Yeah.
There's plenty of work.
There is. And being able to say, I can jump into your environment and I can deal with any editing platform that maybe you want me to
use. That's true.
Is great.
Because you're going to find, and this is my parting thought for the day, you're going to find as an editor or as somebody who works with this technology, that as the landscape changes, there is going to be an expectation that you understand more than one platform.
You got to be adaptable, folks. Be ready to move in different directions. Okay, so next week, Your hardware, the Mac Pro, your other options, stay tuned next week. Workflow show and
workflow.
Oh. Yes, so it's workflow. So David wants us to remind you that all of your hate mail can be directed at workflowshow@chessa.com. That's workflowshow at chesa.com. Workflowshow@chessa.com. This has been Nick Gold and Merrill Davis
signing off.
Talk to you next time. Bye bye.